ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Krishna Kripalu Arjunaire, Lakshya Kariya, Jagathere Rakhiyachen, Upadesha Diya. Krishna is so merciful that simply by aiming his instructions at Arjuna, he has given protection to the whole world. Sarvaguyatamam bhuya srinume paramam vacha ishtosi me dridam iti tathavakshami te hitam. Manmana bhavamad bhakto madhyajimnam namaskuru mam evaishyasi satyam te pratijani priyoshime. Because you are my very dear friend, I am speaking to you my supreme instruction, the most confidential knowledge of all. Hear this from me, for it is for your benefit. Always think of me and become my devotee. Worship me and offer your homage unto me. Thus you will come to me without fail. I promise you this because you are my very dear friend. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. This is a quotation from the Bhagavad Gita, 1864-65, text 59. Purva agya veda dharma karma yoga jnana sabha siddhi shenite agya valavana. Although Lord Krishna previously explained the proficiency of executing Vedic rituals, performing fruitive activity as enjoined in the Vedas, practicing yoga and cultivating jnana, these last instructions are most powerful and stand above all others. E agya bale bhakter shraddha yada hoya sarva karma tyaga kori se Krishna bhajaya. If the devotee has faith in the strength of this order, he worships Lord Krishna and gives up all other activities. Tavat karmani kurvita na virid na nirvidye tayavata matkata sravanadova shadhayavan najayate. As long as one is not satiated by fruitive activity and has not awakened his taste for devotional service by Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu, one has to act according to the regulative principles of the Vedic injunction. Purport. This is a quotation from Srimad Bhagavatam 11.29, text 62. Shraddha Shabde Vishvasa Kohe Sudrida Nishchai Krishna Bhakti Koila Sarva Karma Krita Hai. Shraddha is confident, firm faith that by rendering transcendental loving service to Krishna, one automatically performs all subsidiary activities. Such faith is favorable to the discharge of devotional service. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Firm faith and confidence are called shraddha. When one engages in the Lord's devotional service, he is to be understood to have performed all his responsibilities in the material world. He has satisfied his forefathers, ordinary living entities, and demigods, and is free of all responsibility. Such a person does not need to meet his responsibilities separately. It is automatically done. Fruit of activity, karma, is meant to satisfy the senses of the conditioned soul. However, when one awakens to Krishna consciousness, he does not have to work separately for pious activities. The best achievement of all fruitive activities is detachment from material life. And this detachment is spontaneously enjoyed by the devotee firmly engaged in the Lord's service. Yathathoror mula nishe chanena tripyanti tatskanda bujo pashaka purno paharyach chayathendriyanam tathaiva sarvahanamachute tejya. By pouring water on the root of a tree, one automatically satisfies the trunk, branches, and twigs. Similarly, by supplying food to the stomach, where it nourishes the life air, one satisfies all the senses. In the same way, by worshipping Krishna and rendering service to him, one automatically satisfies all the demigods. This is quotation from Srimad Bhagavatam 4:31-14. We are reading today from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, the Madhya Lila, entitled The Process of Devotional Service. Sanatana Goswami, we have described in yesterday's class, was a man of such immense success within this world. Practically everything anyone could want in this world, materially, he had in vast abundance. He was young, in good health. He had extraordinary, beautiful bodily features. He was coming from the most prestigious family background. He had immense wealth, beautiful palaces, and none of them were mortgaged. He owned them. He had so much power that he was practically ruling the kingdom, in the sense that whatever advice he gave the king accepted. The king accepted him like an younger brother. He was incredibly intelligent. He had not only mastered the sciences of politics and academic subjects, but he was also the greatest scholar of the scriptures. He spoke Arabic, Persian, Bengali, perfect Sanskrit, and everyone loved him. People really looked up at him, took shelter of him. Every class of people. Who could be like that today? But yet, he gave it all up. He gave up his huge fortune. Later on, we'll find he's going to be sleeping under different trees on the hard, cold ground in Vrindavan forests, begging door to door from very, very poor people for just some coarse wheat flour and some chickpeas. He's going to be... He's going to be giving up his royal dress to be wearing the torn, tattered, rejected cloth of common people that they just throw into the street. Why? Because he wants to demonstrate to the world what is of real value. So in this particular chapter, Sanatana Goswami willingly was put in prison. Now this is extraordinary. There's practically no history of this. Most people, big politicians, powerful people, they get put in jail. Why? Because they want to exploit more for themselves. Yes? They're somehow or other just getting something that belongs to the state and keeping it for themselves. So they're put in prison. But Sanatana Goswami's put in prison because he's giving up everything he has. Most people are put in prison because they want to hold on to their power by hook or crook. And he's being put in prison because he wants to renounce it forever. So yes, he goes from a successful, influential, comfortable multi-millionaire to a prisoner. Happily. And then he escapes. And instead of being instrumental in ruling the kingdom, he's actually running away from the law. Haribo. I remember not long ago, there was a devotee in Bombay who was, he made a particular contract. I don't need to go into the details, but he made a contract of dedication of his life for 15 years. But he wanted to be a brahmachari. And the only way he could get out of this contract was to go to prison. To go to prison for a month and then released with the order you have to fulfill. And if he didn't, another month in prison, another month in prison, until finally you just, you know, get out. So the amazing thing is his mother, it's like in her late 60s, widowed mother, I heard her preaching to him. Said, Sanatana Goswami was willing to go to prison to surrender his life to Krishna in the renounced order. Why don't you? Why should you be afraid? You should follow in the footsteps of the great souls. There's not so many mothers like that around. But this is Sanatana Goswami. And here he is in Varanasi, very holy city, on the bank of Ganga, with all humility begging Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to instruct him and to accept him as his servant. What a, that story of Narottam Das Thakur. He was a prince. He was a prince in Kachari Gram. And he also escaped from all the wealth and prestige and was in hiding and ultimately went to Vrindavan and was serving the guru of his heart, Srila Lokanath Goswami. But Lokanath Goswami never accepted disciples. In the absence of Rupa and Sanatana, he considered so much separation in his heart, how could he possibly fulfill the role of a guru? He was just so humble. So Narottam Das Thakur just revealed his heart to him and didn't press it really. He just served. He just served him. But there was a problem. Lokanath Goswami wouldn't accept service from anyone. So he secretly served by going in the forest early, early morning and cleaning the place where Lokanath Goswami would respond to the calls of nature before taking his bath in Yamuna. So this was very strange. Every day he's coming and everything's so clean and nice. So he decided to see what's happening. So early morning he was hiding in bushes and he saw Narottam Das Thakur cleaning his urine and stool from the day before with his own hands, and sweeping the place so nicely and washing it just in the forest. And Lokanath Goswami was shocked. He came jumping out of the woods. What are you doing? You are a prince. You are a person of royalty. You are a wealthy man who are coming from such a prestigious family. What are you doing cleaning my urine and stool with your hands? And Narottam Das Thakur honestly revealed his heart. He said, I gave up that petty temporary wealth of this mortal world, and I have attained the ultimate supreme wealth, humble menial service to my Guru Maharaj. Hearing that, Lokanath Goswami's heart melted, and he gave him initiation. So yes, Sanatan Goswami, he has really showed us the true wealth we should strive for in life. And here, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is instructing him. And the particular verses we are reading yesterday and today are of primal importance. It is the essence. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is declaring to Sanatan Goswami and to all of us how Krishna, out of his mercy, he aimed his instructions toward Arjuna to protect the whole world from illusion. Krishna didn't really speak to Arjuna. He spoke to every conditioned soul within this world. And Arjuna was representing all of us in the Jyotisar under that banyan tree in Kurukshetra. And Lord Chaitanya explains the very essence of the Gita and the essence of all the knowledge of all the great scriptures of the entire planet and creation. He is explaining there are descriptions of how to make progress in fruitive activity, in yoga, Astanga yoga, mystic yoga. There are also so many injunctions describing the path of jnana, discrimination, developing spiritual intelligence, and ultimately attaining Brahman realization or liberation. But he's explaining that none of these are really important. The essence of all important instructions are given in one verse. And everything else is subordinate to that. Every other teaching in the Vedas is really only meant to support this one instruction. The essence of the Gita, the essence of life. Where Krishna tells, Manmanabhava Madbhakto, always think of me. Become my devotee. Worship me and offer your homage unto me. In this way you will come to me without fail. It is my promise because you are my dear friend. Kapila Dev also explains in Sri Bhagavatam that to always remember Krishna and never forget Krishna is the culmination of all the hundreds and thousands of teachings of the scriptures. Everything is subordinate to that. To always remember Krishna, never forget Krishna. And here Lord Chaitanya and Srila Prabhupada are describing that if the devotee has faith in the strength of this order, he worships Lord Krishna and gives up all other activities. Shraddha, or faith, is very much the basis of our devotional service. Lord Chaitanya says, Shraddha is confident, firm faith that by rendering transcendental loving service to Krishna, one automatically performs all subsidiary activities. Such faith is favorable to the discharge of devotional service. In other words, a devotee should have this conviction, this confidence, that simply by pleasing Krishna, it is like watering the root of the tree. All other responsibilities, all other obligations are fulfilled. There's nothing else required. This is pure devotional service. To have this faith,
that there's really nothing else required. Atapumbird vijastreshtas varna shvamati bhagasha. Shvanushtatasya dharmasya samsadir haritoshanam. What is the perfection or success of all various duties we may have in this world? The duties of our ashram, the duties of our occupation, the duties socially. There's only one real success, that our efforts please Krishna. If Krishna is pleased, our life is successful. If Krishna is not pleased, no matter what the world says or thinks, we're a failure. Spiritually, we're a failure. The soul gains no benefit by any activity unless we have pleased Krishna. And what pleases Krishna? That is the most important question in all of life. How to please God. And he is explaining here what pleases him. When we always think of him, when we worship him, when we become his devotee, when we offer homage unto him, and we have faith that that's all that's required. Krishna's bhava-grahi. He accepts the essence of our heart, which is our motivation. What is our attitude? That is what Krishna accepts. Duryodhana was fighting, and Arjuna was fighting. Really, what was the difference? From a physical observation, there was no difference. They were fighting with bows, and they were arrows, and they were riding on chariots, and they were organizing military. They were wearing the same type of armor. The difference is Arjuna was doing it for Krishna, and Duryodhana was doing it out of envy, born of false ego. So whatever we do, Krishna only accepts the attitude in which we do it, the motivational force. Therefore, the perfection of life is to really want to please Krishna. And whatever we do, to really do it to please Krishna, with an understanding of what pleases Krishna. If you want to please somebody, then part of that desire being real is you find out what he likes. It's a very, very insubstantial desire if we're reckless. I want to please you the way I like to do it, or the way I think I should do it. If you really want to please someone, you'll really find out what that person wants. Yes? Therefore, studying of the scripture is very important, so that we understand what Krishna wants. So this faith is so very, very important. Because without proper faith, our Krishna consciousness is insubstantial. And really, our bhakti is determined by the degree of faith we have. Therefore, before speaking the essence of all knowledge, Lord Chaitanya explains to Arjuna how we achieve this faith. Most important, critical consideration in our spiritual life. And what is that? Naishamatis tavarukramangrim sprishatyanata pagamoyadartha. Mahiya sampadarajobishekam niskinchananam navrinita yavat. Unless we bathe our bodies with the dust of the feet of great devotees who have nothing to do with material possessions, we cannot really turn our attention to the lotus feet of Krishna. And those lotus feet vanquish all the unwanted, miserable conditions of life. And it is in this context that Lord Chaitanya composes this very, very illustrious verse that we hear chanted again and again. sadhu sanga sadhu sanga sarva sastra koi lava matra sadhu sanga sarva siddhi hoy. The verdict of all revealed scriptures is that even a moment's association with pure devotees, one can attain all success. In such association, faith awakens within our heart. Srila Prabhupada so nicely explained that faith is developed by hearing in the association of devotees. This tender kripa of faith can so easily be crippled by the wrong association. An association with devotees, Lord Chaitanya explains, means devotees who actually have faith. It means devotees who are honestly and earnestly following the process. Sometimes people who are apparently devotees, but they're blasphemous, or they're critical of others, or they're engaging in sinful activities in an improper way, sometimes that association can be more dangerous to faith than associating with gross materialists. Yes? We've seen devotees who come in the association and they open their hearts with faith in devotees. And when they hear those devotees criticizing others, blaspheming others, their faith is just completely covered. Materialistic people who are not devotees, we're more careful about them. In the sense, we should respect them. We should honor every living being because Krishna is in everyone's heart. But we have certain protective emotions that are there. But when devotees who appear to be representing Krishna and Guru and Parampara are blaspheming and criticizing or behaving very, very improperly, that is very, very dangerous for our faith. Therefore, for such persons, we, depending on our particular position, we may debate them, we offer respects from a safe distance. If we start blaspheming, criticizing, then we get into the hole. It's, for most devotees, it's just not necessary. It's just better to mind your business and carry on with your devotional service in positive practical association. So yes, even amongst devotees, we must be very careful to respect all, but seek out the association of those who are serving Krishna in a positive spirit. It's very important. Otherwise, we are sentimental. Well, this person's a devotee, and they've done so much service for so many years. But if we sit and listen, and they're blaspheming, and they're criticizing, or they're doing wrong things, it can destroy our faith. To have faith in Krishna is so rare. Consider 8,400,000 species of life. The lower species, they don't have any real faith because faith is based on free will, spiritual faith. And in this human form of life, look at society. People are so much immersed in Maya's network. Brahmanda Pramite Kona Bhagyavan Jiva Guru Krishna Prasari Bhai Bhakti Vata Bija. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu tells Rupa Goswami, this seed of faith is so precious. The living entity wanders through many, many universes, through millions of species of life, till finally meets Guru and gets the seed of faith. And it's so delicate. It has to be protected and watered, nourished regularly. To lose it is such a great, great, great tragedy. It's like the growing of a tree, Lord Chaitanya says. This little seed of devotion, if you keep watering it, it's like growing a tree. Recently I was with our dear godbrother Shamsundar Prabhu, who helped to obtain Bhaktivedanta Manor with the help of George Harrison, his dear friend. And Shamsundar Prabhu took me to his home in Oregon, Salem, Oregon. This is just a few weeks ago. And he was very eager to take me into the wilderness. Hare Krishna. My mind is a wilderness, you know. He's an adventurous person. So he just packed a little bag with some dried foods, just a little bit, and a couple blankets, and just we walked and walked and walked miles and miles, and then through this forest, then we come to a stage where it says, you are now entering the wilderness. Wilderness means where they've never allowed any cutting of trees, where no cars or anything's allowed in. It's really the wilderness, just the virgin forests that have been like this since time immemorial. So we're in this wilderness, and he really likes trees. And he was showing me these trees that were big, big trees, huge trees. And some of them are 800 years old, 900 years old, 1,000 years old. Yes? So here's one tree. It's taken 1,000 years for it to grow and be what it is. But do you know how long it takes to cut it down? Previously, when they used axes, it would probably take an hour to cut down a tree. But with modern technology, a chainsaw, you could practically cut down a tree that took 5,000 years to be what it is in 5 minutes. Yes? Faith is like that. It takes so many lifetimes just to get the seed of it. And then it takes lifetimes usually to develop it. Many, many lifetimes. And in this, our whole life, we're practicing Krishna consciousness, trying to develop this faith. But the tree of this faith could be cut down in a matter of seconds by the axe, or in modern terms, the chainsaw of harsh, critical, blasphemous words. That's why it said when someone's blaspheming devotee, you should hold your ears and run away. There's other things that you can do, but we don't follow those. We're not allowed to follow them. But we either have to defeat them or run away. But if we listen, you know, all that we've given, so much tapasya, so much austerity, so much that we've given our life to develop is just being cut right down. Puts doubts in our mind. What does Krishna say about doubt? Krishna says, for the doubting soul, there's happiness neither in this world or the next. Now, to have doubts is important before we come to the true path, because otherwise we can get captured by any other deviant ideology. Yes? Many of us had doubts that material life will make us happy. We had doubts in what many scientists and educators and politicians were telling us will be the perfection of our life. You know, vote for me or buy this product. We have doubts in this whole materialistic phenomena. The capitalistic conception of trying to somehow or other convince you that you will be happy if you own this. And in order to own this, you have to come under my subjugation by giving me your money and giving me your mind. Yes? In the 1930s and 40s, people didn't know cigarettes were dangerous. And the cigarette companies were really, really advertising. I remember when I was young, nobody had more expert advertisements than the cigarette companies. Just the billboards and television commercials and magazines, they were everywhere. I'll never forget, Prabhupada saw a big billboard. They call in India hoardings. What do you call here? Signs? I don't know. But on the roadside, huge. And there's a cigarette called Cool. A very famous cigarette. And there was pictures of waterfalls and beautiful green trees and flowers and a very handsome man and a beautiful lady sitting under the midst of a waterfall smoking these cigarettes. And they really looked like they were so distinguished. They were enjoying so much. They were just where it's at. And then there was a sign that said, "Be refreshingly cool, smoke cool." And people were smoking cool. They were reading. They were. This advertisement was everywhere. It was on the roadsides. It was in the magazines. It was even in television. It was waterfalls, and those same people were going like this. And be refreshingly cool, smoke cool. And they're blowing smoke in each other's face. And this was considered such a romantic experience. So Prabhupada sees this. And he said, this is the illusion of Maya. They're breathing in fire and telling you that it's cool. And you believe them. Yes, it's menthol, so refreshing, so cool, but it's smoke of fire. There you go. So in this way, we should have doubts. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said it's a world of cheaters and cheated. People are trying to cheat us in order to make profit, in order to gain prestige and power. People are cheating. And what are they really cheating? They're cheating us of the moments of our life that we're just becoming infatuated by this pursuit of material enjoyment. And we're giving so much of our precious life's energy for that purpose. Being cheated. So yes, we've doubted. And then oftentimes we see in various religious or spiritual paths a lot of hypocrisy. Ideologies not backed by any sound philosophy or logic, or just created by people's minds. And then we come in contact with Srila Prabhupada or his representatives who are speaking from Guru Parampara. The whole idea of Parampara is we could really have faith because we know it's true. It's no person's imagination. It's no person's just individual realization. It's realizations backed by the realizations of great souls since time immemorial, based on the word of God. Prabhupada told us, if you simply have faith that I have not come to cheat you, you will go back home, back to Godhead. And Prabhupada also explained that we shouldn't believe him because he says it. We believe it because he's representing Krishna coming through the line of great saints, the Parampara. Sometimes Prabhupada called himself the postal peon, just delivering the message as it is. My only qualification, he would sometimes say, I have not changed. I'm simply presenting the pure truth as it is. And we know he is because we see that Krishna is saying it. We see that Lord Chaitanya is explaining it. And all the great gurus of the parampara have said the same thing. And Prabhupada not only spoke the truth, but he lived the truth. So that faith is so very, very important. And when we become a devotee, we have great responsibility. Not only to protect our own faith, but to nourish and protect other people's faith. Do you know what an offense it is before God to cut down that tree of faith that has been developing over thousands of lifetimes? If we speak or we behave in such a way to cut down a person's faith in God, what will Krishna think of us? It's the most precious, valuable thing in all of creation, faith in God. Faith in a true conception of God. So association with pure devotees is so very important. And Prabhupada explains there are various explanations of who a pure devotee is. One is a pure devotee is one whose heart is completely pure, who just has no inclination toward materialistic sense gratification, who has no false ego, who is immersed in ecstatic loving service to Sri Sri Radha Gokulananda. That is a pure devotee. But Prabhupada explains there's another type of pure devotee. And that is a person who may be a conditioned soul and have material desires and have material ego, but he's aspiring, or she is aspiring for pure devotional service. That is our goal, and we're following the proper means by which we can attain it. Prabhupada explains that person is actually acting and speaking in such a way with the proper aspiration that it's just a matter of time till pure devotional service in its highest sense is revealed. So that's a pure devotee too. One who aspires for ecstatic love of Krishna, uncontaminated by jnana or mystic yoga or karma, and who is following the teachings of a pure devotee. That person is also a pure devotee. Sometimes Prabhupada said all his disciples were pure devotees, as long as they're following his teachings properly. That means speaking properly and acting properly. He said, you're all pure devotees. We're looking at each other. But it's true. So to associate with pure devotees means associating with those self-realized souls and also those who are honestly and earnestly trying to follow those self-realized souls. Because through their association, we're actually getting the association of the greatest souls to be instruments in the hands of the great souls. That is the aspiration we are striving for. If we try to be great, we'll fall down. But if we try to be servants of the servants, honest servants and the servants of the great, then in the eyes of God, we will be great. To try to be a Mahatma it's actually impossible. But if you just try to honestly and earnestly serve the Mahatmas, then you will be Mahatma. It's the only way. Servant of the servant of the servant. So association is so critical and so important. For Vaishnava community to be something wonderful, every devotee has to take responsibility in his or her own life to be good association, to seek good association, and also to be good association. Srila Prabhupada said, you make spiritual advancement according to the degree you accept responsibility. The sense of responsibility is the offering of our heart. And Prabhupada saw it very practical. That's what initiation is about. There are many levels of what is taking place in initiation. One is we are being formally connected to the current of divine grace coming through the Guru, the grace of the whole parampara, which originates in Radharani's love for Krishna. But another very essential and tangible factor of initiation is you take vows. Why take vows? Because whether you take vows or don't take vows, if you're following the principles, you're doing the same thing. Yes? But when you take vows, there's a serious sense of responsibility. Now, I have to do it. I have vowed no illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling, no meat eating. In one lecture, Prabhupada was talking about materialistic life, and he said, no illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling, no meat eating, so many no's and the demons will die. Because people like these things. To say no to them is... But when you take a vow, the whole idea of that vow, now we are responsible to follow them. To say, I will chant 16 rounds every day, it's very nice, and you can do it. But when you vow to do it, then you feel a responsibility. I have to do it. So taking vows is very, very helpful to our spiritual progress, because we actually gain a real sense of obligation and responsibility to do what we're supposed to do. And without that sense of responsibility, we don't make much spiritual advancement. Even in Bible, Jesus said, be hot or cold, but if you're lukewarm, I spit you out. Arivo. So we have to be intense. And that intensity doesn't mean, get out of my way. It means a sense of responsibility, an intense sense of responsibility. You know, in marriage is about responsibility. All this stuff about love. I've never been married in my whole life, but in the 53 years on earth in this particular body, you know, I look around to see what's happening. And this whole idea is, oh, I love you, and I see the moon and the stars in your eyes. You know, it doesn't last. You know, after a few years, you're seeing like a blazing forest fire in your eyes. You know, what marriage is really about is responsibility. That's why there's vows. In every great religion of the world, you take vows at marriage. It's not just some common law contract, because those common law contracts can easily be broken. But in Kali Yuga, the last leg of religion in Kali Yuga is truthfulness, right? Where people, decent people, can somehow or other maintain their word of honor. So if you make a vow, you're expected to follow it, no matter what. Somehow or other, you'll work things out. It's responsibility. I remember my parents, when I was 8 years old, they were talking about getting divorced, and I cried. Confession, I cried. So my mother and father said, we made him cry. We're responsible that he's happy. We should stay together. So they did it out of a sense of responsibility for their children and for the vows that they've taken. And when my mother passed away last year, they were married for 58 years. And what I saw is in about the last 15 years, they had such deep respect. And I actually saw something like love. Not the moon and stars or the eyes love, but a real sense of dedication to each other. But it actually took about 40 years to earn that. Huh? Otherwise, everything just remains so frivolous and shallow. Nothing deep or real comes without responsibility and surrender, even in the material world. What to speak of in the spiritual world? So to take responsibility is so very, very important. That's why we take our vows. And beyond the vows, in our active devotional service, that's what's going to give us the taste. If we just whimsically do whatever we want, when we want, how we want, with who we want, and we give up something because it's just no fun, or we give up something because it's difficult, then we're one of those lukewarm people that get spit out. There's no realization, there's no substance, there's no nectar. Nectar comes through tapasya. And tapasya really means taking responsibility. So Prabhupada said, you'll make spiritual advancement according to how you take responsibility in Krishna's service. And this means active service too. Prabhupada, devotees would take responsibilities. Temple president is responsibility. Sankirtan leader is a responsibility. Pujari is a responsibility. Washing the pots is responsibility. Cooking is responsibility. Cleaning is responsibility. We do it in a very conscientious, responsible, and dependable way. To be dependable really wins the heart of Guru and Krishna. Because you could... something can happen when people are dependable, right? We were discussing last night, I won't mention names, but there was a temple in America, and there was a president of the temple who wasn't all that strict about a lot of sadhana and things, which he should have been, and Prabhupada was really preaching to him to be, but he wasn't so strict. So the leading Prabhupada disciples of that temple formed, that they were like a board, and they decided to remove the president and put someone else in. And then soon after that, Prabhupada comes to the temple. He says, where is this devotee? They say, well, he's not, because he wasn't doing this, 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 and he was doing this, this, and this, he's not the president anymore. We put another temple president who was a very staunch, good devotee. Prabhupada was very upset. He dismantled the board. He removed the president, and he brought the original person in. He said, whatever you may say about this person, he's dependable. I trust him. I trust his integrity. I trust his loyalty. And I could depend on him. Therefore, I want him to be here. So, of course, good sadhana and all of that is essential for our spiritual lives. But another aspect of Krishna consciousness that is very essential for our spiritual lives is to be responsible in such a way that Guru, Krishna, and the Vaishnavas can depend on us. They know we're going to be there, whatever happens, however difficulty, whether there's sunshine or monsoon rainstorms, we're going to be there doing what we're supposed to do in the right attitude. That's responsibility. And if we're really serious about making spiritual advancement, we must take responsibility for our sadhana. We must take responsibility to chant attentively, guarding against the offenses. We must take responsibility to read and understand Prabhupada's glorious teachings. We must take responsibility in our behavior to display a character that actually inspires people rather than degrades people. We have seen in history, not only of our movement, but of every spiritual movement, when people do not act with good character, how it can devastate people's faith. Yes? How it can dishearten people's faith. So we all have to, if we want to make advancement, each one of us, from the new bhakta and bhaktin to the GBCs and everyone in between, if we want a Vaishnava community, every one of us has to accept responsibility to be dependable in our service, in our morality, in our character, behavior, and in our sadhana. Then we can actually develop something extraordinary. We can start to develop real relationships. Relationships require responsibility too. Yes? So when there is an association of devotees, where devotees are really taking responsibility to help and to inspire one another by their words, by their actions, that is an environment where faith and devotion just grow and expand. A misconception is, let the advanced devotees do that. I'm a neophyte, so I can say what I want and do what I want, and who cares? Krishna in your heart cares. What's the difference between an advanced devotee and a neophyte devotee? The difference is not how many years you've been around. The difference is to the extent we take responsibility. You could be an advanced devotee real soon. If you're humble and respectful and are dependable in your duties and dependable in your sadhana. You could be an advanced devotee in days if you really, really take that to heart with continuity. Yes? Of course, we shouldn't think we're advanced, but we're making advancement. So, yes. Just like that President of the United States when I was a little boy, John F. Kennedy. He wasn't a self-realized soul by any means. But he did say something that was very, very, it struck the whole nation. And it can certainly be applied to devotional service. Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country. Hare Krishna. Do you like that? Since devotees quote that, wherever he is, I'm sure he's getting some blessing. But we're all wanting to take. And we're all complaining. Why is this person not doing that? And why that person is not doing this? And why everybody else is not doing everything else? But the real question is, why am I not doing what will inspire hope and faith in everyone? If you want to be advanced, even if you're brand new, think like that. That's how you make advancement. Don't just wait around for everyone else to do everything. Take responsibility with humility. Never think yourself the doer. We're the most fallen. But we're responsible to do the will of Krishna. To help create an environment where it's actually not only easy, but it's joyful to always think of Krishna. Worship Krishna. Become Krishna's devotee and offer homage to Krishna. At every moment, every time we open our mouth, we could talk gossip, prajalpa. We could just talk just ordinary, mundane subjects. Or we could criticize and blaspheme just to make everyone see what a great heroic person I am. I'm such a fearless warrior that I don't mind all the Vedic injunctions. I will just throw my thunderbolts and my swords and the daggers of my sharp words behind that person's back just to show how great I am and how I'm the protector of Dharma. Haribo. And meanwhile, everybody's faith, everyone's hope is just being torn to shreds. Yes? Or we could talk about Krishna. Why not talk about Krishna? It's not something old-fashioned. It's eternally fresh. It's eternally new. Prabhupada, right upstairs, he spent thousands of hours in the middle of the night right upstairs of this very Bhaktivedanta Manor writing his books, dictating his translations and purports. Why? To give us something to talk about. Why not talk about that? Not just, you know, in morning and evening classes and then the rest of the day, prajalpa. He gave us something wonderful to talk about. Krishna. It enlivens people. Talk about the teachings of the Gita, the beautiful qualities of the deities. Talk about the pastimes of Krishna, the mercy of Krishna, the wonderful, wonderful glories of the Vaishnavas. That's what's in Prabhupada's books. And this is our responsibility. Prabhupada quoted Lord Chaitanya, Amara goi guru hoi tari desh. Become guru. He's talking to all of us. Doesn't mean we have to give diksha and all that. It means become guru. And what do you do to become guru? You just repeat the message of Krishna. That become make. We all have to take that responsibility to repeat the message of Krishna, to inspire people by our activities, by our behavior, by our humility, by our service attitude, by our words. And yes, to the degree we take that responsibility, we'll make advancement and we'll actually be encouraging other people to make advancement. Whether we see a little seed beginning to be a tree in someone, or whether we see a big, gigantic banyan tree of devotional progress, it's our duty to just pour whatever water we have on everybody's devotional creeper by encouraging them. Yes? By giving hope, by giving faith. That's what association of devotees is about. So what is association? It means we are seeking the association, we are seeking to hear, we are seeking to serve, and we're also seeking to speak in such a way that we're being nourished and we're nourishing others. And to the degree we take this as a responsibility, at every moment we're going to make progress. Guru and Krishna can depend on us because we have good behavior, good character, and we're responsible. Is there any questions? Yes, Gaurangi Devi. So happy to see you. How do you go?
You were talking about and
I'm happy to see you, but I'm not happy because I cannot hear you. Women are to be heard when they are Vaishnavas.
You were talking about blaspheming and criticizing, to avoid such association.
But and you were also saying that we shouldn't criticize even like materialistic persons because Krishna is in everybody's heart. So just recently I had an experience, and I won't mention any names, but what if we hear a devotee, a devotee who's been around for a while and we should offer them respect, criticizing and thus meaning people outside quite badly actually, and if we see that it does disturb young devotees, what should we do in such a situation?
Srila Prabhupada, in general, he didn't criticize, but he exposed materialistic illusion. Yes? Sometimes he exposed the misleading propaganda of materialistic atheistic scientists and atheistic consumerism. Yes? But he was like a doctor, just giving a diagnosis to protect us. There was no malice in his heart. But actually, amanina manadena, ordinarily, unless we're really acting on that platform genuinely, we should be respectful. Prabhupada, in principle, would preach against intoxications. But when he was on the Bowery, he was extremely kind and respectful to the drunkards and the prostitutes. He wasn't like, you know, these born-again fundamentalist type people that said, "You are going to hell." No, Prabhupada was very kind to even those persons. We've spoken about Dr. Mishra. He was a Mayavadi. And Prabhupada would speak against the philosophy, but with such compassion. And when Dr. Mishra was sick, Prabhupada became like his nurse and was cooking for him with love and devotion. And Dr. Mishra, in that videotape, he actually says that Swamiji saved my life by his love. He nursed me back to health. Yes? So, you know, if we're going to try to follow in Prabhupada's footsteps, we have to see the whole picture. It's not that he was just like going around blasting against everybody. He did it in a balance of great compassion and love, even for those persons. Yes? So, otherwise, how are we going to elevate somebody? Yes. Prabhupada, in Conway Hall, when he was speaking, was it out Conway Hall? Didn't he address, like, ladies and gentlemen? Now, by Vedic standards, none of those people were ladies and gentlemen. Right? I mean, you know, most of them were eating meat and taking intoxications and having girlfriends and boyfriends and all these things and gambling. But Prabhupada, ladies and gentlemen, he was gracious, he was kind, he was respectful, and they opened their hearts to listen to him. And by the time they heard what he said, they realized that he's very respectful and he likes us, but we're very fallen. That's how Narada Muni preached to Prachini Barhishat. He was respectful, but because he was respectful, the king opened his heart to him, and then Narada Muni actually revealed to him how he has to improve. So just to harshly be criticizing and blaspheming and even for persons who are not devotees, we should be very, very careful. We have to be very, very careful, unless we're really like a doctor, just cleaning or giving a proper diagnosis to protect the devotees and others from getting exploited by this materialistic consciousness. But at the same time, real preaching is to do it with dignity.
It's not a mudslinging occasion. It's to speak the truth with dignity. And if somebody's not doing that, then either we should try to correct them, or we should try to find someone who can correct them, or we should just be somewhere else. I don't know all the details, but that's a general way. Does that address your question? How do you know? Yes?
Maharaj, when individuals participate in Srila Prabhupada's great Iskcon society, very soon they learn to take a measure of responsibility, and very soon they find that there are others to whom they are responsible, whether it's the book distributor on the street or the GBC and so on. And within that, usually there's some element of care and protection for those who one feels that are listening to him. How then does one reconcile protecting them and perhaps explaining another's position, which one, in one's own value judgment, may feel is like the chainsaw which can destroy their faith, some other person giving some value judgment of what is their attitude and so on? How can one reconcile this with one's need to be respectful and not offensive to these other? Many times a person may say, oh, don't associate with such and such, such and such, he's whatever. How can one get that balance? How can one simultaneously be the student and the teacher?
That takes maturity. That takes maturity by just speaking according to our realizations. We gradually become mature in our devotional service, because etiquette is important to follow. Otherwise, we create a very chaotic, disrespectful, and faithless condition if proper etiquette is not followed. Sometimes a tree has a diseased limb and it has to be cut, but it should be to protect the tree, not to destroy the tree. So your question, I'm not really sure what you're asking.
I'm asking, sometimes a person in any area of responsibility within Srila Prabhupada's ISKCON society, with that responsibility comes his responsibility for others. So how does one safely advise those under him how to perceive others without being who in one's own value judgment may think are a little off, without being offensive to those other people?
That would be determined by time, place, and circumstance. But what's most important is to train people in the attitude that we're speaking about today. And then that attitude will be applied according to the particular time, place, and circumstance. One more question? How do you know? Yes.
Prabhupada specify a lot about the difference between spiritual life and material life, is that any progress made in spiritual life, one never loses. So I'm just trying to understand, how do you reconcile the chainsaw effect on the creeper, the devotion, and Prabhupada's reassurance that making progress in spiritual life is never lost, life after life?
Say it again, I'm sorry.
Sorry. How do you reconcile Prabhupada saying that if you make progress in spiritual life, you never lose it. You actually stay on that platform.
So I'm trying to reconcile that with being cutting your own creeper by being offensive. So what is the situation of an individual?
On the absolute platform, you can never lose any progress we make in devotional service. However, it can be thoroughly covered, even for many, many births. It's still there, but you and nobody else even knows it, except maybe Krishna, or definitely Krishna. So yes, you know, when our faith is cut down due to offenses, usually is cut down either by our own offenses or associating with other people who are too offensive, or basic spiritual laziness. It's temporary, but it's very critical. In the true sense, it's never really, it's not permanently cut, it's covered. We've seen devotees who become very advanced and then they fall down to a very abominable condition. All their spiritual progress is still there, but it's in such an unmanifest, dormant state. And they have to really, really suffer until, you know, they atone for those offenses, in which time all that glorious progress either immediately or gradually begins to manifest again. Lord Chaitanya explains to Sanatan Goswami, you can be a rich man with a pot of gold, but if you don't know where the pot of gold is, you're loitering on a street like a beggar. Yes? It's there. But if you don't know where it is, if you don't have access to it, you're suffering like a beggar. It's like that. We may have tremendous spiritual progress, but if due to offenses or negligence we fall down, all the advancement is there, but we have no access to it until Krishna takes us seriously again. Hari. Yes.
So Maharaj, can you please explain why do we criticize?
Maya?
No. Why do devotees have this tendency of criticism? So if I can understand that, then I can protect myself from doing that.
What type of criticism?
Criticizing other devotees.
Why we have that tendency? Because we've been conditioned to take pleasure in drinking this nectar since time immemorial. Really, gossip is nectar for worldly people. They love it. They live by it. They're addicted to it. Yes? And if we're not developing the higher taste of hearing and chanting about Krishna and the virtues of his devotees, then we're going to speak nonsense. Prabhupada explains Moni Baba. When a guru sometimes sees the disciple speaks all nonsense, he makes him take a vow of lifelong silence. That's not the perfection of life. Perfection of life is to use this power of speech to glorify God and to uplift people. I've seen in India where some Moni Babas, they just have a little slate, chalkboard, and some chalk, and they write because they can't talk. You ask them a question, they go. And I've seen, you know, they're writing on their chalkboard, and they're writing all prajapa. Oh, politics and who won the cricket match. I guess it's better than talking because they can't say so much, you know. The chalkboard's only this big. Well, we all have that tendency. That's what conditioned life is about. If we simply develop a taste for hearing and chanting about Krishna, Srinvatam Sukata Krishna Punya Sravana Kirtana, Ridyantasto Hyapatrani Vidunoti Suritsatam, if we just develop an eagerness, a taste to just talk about Krishna and hear about Krishna, and those things related to Krishna, and those people related to Krishna, then Krishna is so pleased, he cleanses our whole heart and reveals himself. That's really all that's required. The whole purpose of everything we're doing is to develop an inclination to hear and chant about Krishna. So why should we neutralize the effects of so many years of devotional service by speaking nonsense, by speaking gossips, by criticizing others unnecessarily? Harsh words can be like arrows that pierce a person's heart. We have to be so careful, such a responsibility. We have seen historically, as well as in our contemporary life, where just one wrong phrase towards somebody and your relationship is finished for life. Yes? They just never forget it. Very difficult. To take so much responsibility. We also have to be forgiving for people who do it to us. We should be forgiving for anybody who does anything against us. Without forgiveness, there's no question of sanity in Vaishnav society. Because people make mistakes. So we should forgive. But we should be very responsible. That's part of our responsibility, to be tolerant and forgiving of others. But also to behave in such a way that we're nourished, that we're giving hope. We're not destroying hope. So yes, that tendency is very strong. Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, if you just control the tongue, everything else will come in line. Yes? That's all you really have to do, is somehow or other control this tongue. And the tongue has two purposes, to taste and to vibrate. Taste means just eat prasad, and not too much. Yes? That's difficult, but it's not so difficult. The much more difficult phenomenon of the tongue is its propensity to vibrate. Kirtaniya Sadahari, just try to develop that taste for chanting about Krishna and hearing about Krishna. Lord Chaitanya says in Sri Chaitanya Bhagavata to one Brahmin who said, I've blasphemed your devotees. And the Lord said, blaspheming the Lord and his devotees is drinking poison with your tongue. It will kill your propensity for Krishna. Now that's Lord Chaitanya speaking. And it's absolute. Criticizing Vaishnavas without a very, very compassionate and genuine spirit of servitude. If we criticize Vaishnavas, it's drinking poison with our tongue. It will kill our propensity for real devotion. Prabhupada said, Mahaprabhu said, there's only one antidote: to drink the nectar of praising Krishna and his devotees with your tongue. And that's wonderful. If somebody's having a problem, we have to be very careful. We don't want to just discourage that person. I've seen with my own eyes, Prabhupada, devotees who were very fallen. And Prabhupada in his lectures would really blast against sinful activities. But sometimes he'd be so encouraging and appreciative of the devotee that they'd come back just because they want to please him. If somebody's down, you just don't beat them down lower. You try to elevate them. And that's what expert preaching is about, to elevate people from wherever they're at, not beat them down. And if we're not such an expert preacher, it's better to just mind our own business and chant Hare Krishna and talk about Krishna. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Hari Bol.